afternoon. Call this meeting of the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee order. Mr. Kosnick, you have a chance to review the minutes of March 30th.
I have. I move to approve the minutes from March 30th.
Mr. Kosnick moves the minutes of March 30th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, we have several bills up today. We are going to start with House File 1182. And I will move House File 1182, Representative Anderson's bill, be referred to Ways and Means. So, Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the one issue on this piece of legislation that your members will be interested in is you do have a fiscal note with this. The money that is highlighted in this, though, is being reimbursed to the anatomical gift account, so there will not be a cost to the state.
All right. To the bill, then.
Mr. Chair,
that's
I've
it.
Just
that's
opened
That's first. All that we're dealing with right there. Yep. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Are there any questions from members? Representative McNamara.
Representative Anderson, is the bill need to go, why would the bill still need to go to Ways and Means? Are you saying there is no fiscal cost, but there will be a fiscal cost and the money's going to be reimbursed?
Mr. Chair, I've been told that, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I've been told that the Ways and Means Committee wants to see anything that's involving with money, and I'm happy to comply. It doesn't bother me at all.
Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none. No other questions from members? You have a testifier? Did you have anything to say? Okay.
We want to respect your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. All right. Seeing no questions, I will renew my motion that House File 1182 be referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. And most prevails. Thank you,
Representative. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Just passing out the amendment. Members, the next bill on the agenda is House File 1422, Representative Swedzinski's bill. I will move House File 1422. Okay, to the general register. And there is also an A1 amendment. I will also. Okay. All right, members, I guess this A1 amendment is one that we put on last year, but we would like a clarification. And Mr. Burris, if you could speak to it, please.
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 amendment was taken up when the bill was heard in committee last year. That was March 12th meeting. The amendment was adopted so that it would be part of the working document as it, or the bill as it currently stands. So taking it back up again today would be the equivalent to, you know, any other bill that might the committee might take up, amend, put on the table and take up again. So it's as if the amendment had just been adopted from the standpoint of committee activity.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Representative Swedzinski, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you. The bill, House File 1422, was brought forth really from a public safety standpoint from the folks that own the motor coach bus organizations within the state of Minnesota, and their focus on really young passengers riding in the vehicle that they're essentially responsible for, and the fear that they would be, you know, in most cases, young minors would be riding with parents on a bus. And the focus was that the driver of the bus, his main focus, should be on the road and keeping, you know, 50-some folks safe and not necessarily focused on what's going on behind them. And so that's essentially what the bill has been working towards and trying to accomplish. And I'd appreciate some questions and or just affirmative vote. So, all right. Representative North.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We talked about this last year, and I can't remember the answer, so I'm just going to ask again. I apologize. One of the issues is we have young children, and I completely agree the bus driver cannot be worried about what's happening behind him when he's driving. But does he have any obligation to let people know that they should be belted? Is it posted? So what's the obligation for the bus driver to make certain that people know they should be belted? And then if they don't comply, you know, I'm in agreement with what's happening here. But could you refresh my memory?
Certainly. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I believe it's state law. I don't know for sure. Maybe Don Parsons' staff would answer that. But I believe in most publicly used buses that there is some signage within the bus. And I'm not positive if they also have to make a verbal announcement prior to a trip. But I know that there are, you know, under circumstances, and the fear for this is that, you know, if you know, you were to happen to get pulled over, does it make sense to have, you know, 14 or 15 tickets written to one driver of a bus, you know, if this instance were to happen? And I think that's the clarification that we're going for. So.
Yes, and I understand what you're trying to do, and I don't really have any problem with that. I guess I was just hopeful that there was something in law that required bus drivers to either make an announcement or have it posted. And I was looking in the interim, and I remember at least in one bus I've been at that there was a sign saying seatbelts required. Yeah. But I don't know if anything for young children. If they're with a parent, their parent should buckle them up anyway. But anyway, I was just looking for clarification. And if we can find an answer to that before that hits the floor, I might ask it again. So just give you a heads up. Okay.
Is anyone in the audience would like to testify? Representative Sundin, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swedzinski. How common of a violation has this been in the past? How many violations are we talking about number-wise in the state of Minnesota in recent years?
Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, you know, I do not believe the violations have been that all that prevalent, but I think it's more of a, from a mindset standpoint of responsibility within the bus. And when it comes to, you know, the focus on the road, because when you have the responsibility of dozens of folks, you don't want the idea that, hey, I could get, you know, if these kids are back there and, you know, I get mad, I might, you know, lose my license over the fact that we want folks staying on the road. And I think that's, it's the mindset and the.
Representative Hausman.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I just wondered if there was someone in the audience who wanted to speak to it or testify. It looked like there might be.
Well, we have made that announcement and asked if anyone would like to testify, and no one came down.
You made yourself look itchy.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lieutenant Brian Rue with the State Patrol Office of People Transportation. To answer a couple of questions that have come up, just to clarify, there is no requirement that a bus driver make a verbal announcement to the passengers that they have to be belted. It is a recommended best practice based on a federal recommendation, and we also, you know, concur from the State Patrol that it's kind of like a flight attendant makes the announcement before you go on a trip. Here's where your emergency exits are. Here's where your fire extinguisher is if needed. And here's where the seatbelts are. Makes you wear them. It's not required, but a majority of the motor coach operators do that. I do know that. Secondly, to our knowledge, nobody's ever been cited for, a driver's never been cited for the passengers. To my understanding, the concern from the industry is the potential's there, and they just want to alleviate that.
Thank you, sir. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we took care of the effective date, but it looks like it needs to be amended. August 1st, 2016.
Mr. Roof?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, the effective date reflects last year, so unless the goal is at this point is to make it a retroactive violation, which would involve some additional language, you might want to consider pushing that out to 2016.
I'll move that language.
Representative Runbeck?
Verbal amendment, line 1.19, effective date August 1, 2016.
Burris, is that fine as far as an oral amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck. So what I have is page 1, line 19, delete 2015 and insert 2016.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck moves that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment passes. Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Any other questions?
Testifier.
Or Representative Swedzinski. Representative Swedzinski, two-year bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your vote.
All right, then I will renew my motion. House file 1422 be sent to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski moves House File 3723 be sent to the General Register. Representative Drazkowski, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, House File 3723 seeks to amend our permitting that we have in statute that is required or somewhat, or in some cases, may be implied by local units of government as well as state government to be in a position of permitting farmers to place their manure hoses in the ditch as they pump manure through the hoses and inject it into the fields rather than driving their manure wagons across the highways and roads of our state, which can be of concern to many people. So what we are doing here is taking away the permitting authority that was put in statute last year for townships and counties and leaving in place the permitting authority that was placed in statute for the state government. The author would actually really like to simply, ideally, in a policy way, give explicit authority to farmers to use any road ditch in the state to do this. But, of course, this is a compromise from that position. Mr. McBeth is here to talk more about some of the problems that we are already seeing in both the township and county levels. But before he speaks, Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment for the bill and would like to, on page 1 after line 23, insert the words effective date, period. This section is effective the day following final enactment. Period. And Mr. Chair, what that would do is obviously, as it says, make the bill effective immediately upon being signed by the governor.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski moves that oral amendment as stated. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So with that, we have Mr. McBeth here to talk further about the bill and some of the problems we're seeing in local units of government.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Darren McBeth with Great Plant Moody here on behalf of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. And thanks for your time and attention to this matter. This came before this committee. Some of you all may remember Representative Torkelson and I explained the bill to the committee on this agriculture matter last year under House File 1415. And a version of that then made it into the Lights on Transportation bill and passed into law just last summer. And it was our surprise and an unintended consequence that as the law referenced a road authority and its permitting regime for these situations, that applied beyond MnDOT in the state of Minnesota and applied to local units of government. And so, again, just a little background, the intention for which we came to the committee last year and passed this was that there were some problems or some confusion in a farmer, and they're all certified applicators by the Department of Agriculture, I might add, running these force mains or flex lines from the point of the pumping station to the field where the manure would be applied. And running it parallel to a state highway rather than perpendicular or through a culvert under a highway had some concerns from the Department of Transportation, especially when the farmer or the applicator didn't necessarily own all the contiguous land from point A to B to C. So that was the intention of House File 1415, and then the underlying Subdivision 10 that you have before you that's in law today was to clarify that. And so this committee, you all agreed with that. We did so. But then in finding out that it applied to road authorities having that permitting opportunity rather than just MnDOT, the milk producers and dairymen and other livestock operators were surprised to learn then of townships starting to require some permits in these situations. And in talking to the townships, one of the current concerns that I'm a little sympathetic to was that this express permitting authority for a road authority, implied permitting authority for a township, they felt brought or could bring some liability if they didn't put in a permitting regime. I disagree with that. The liability in any case would be of those controlling and installing or temporarily placing the flex lines in the ditch on the right-of-way. By the way, they are required to have insurance, of course, and to be certified. So I disagree with that of any ambiguity on who has the liability. It's the farmer or the applicator. So we're here with this legislation to help with those concerns of liability, saying backing up to where we were 10 months ago in terms of local units of government need not be concerned with this. This was always intended for MnDOT and the state in rights of way along state highways. So that's a little background and the explanation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for members? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second paragraph of our bill summary says the permit provision allows for running the pipe for up to 14 days to the field, including through any intervening landowner's property, which is more than rights of way. But are you saying townships wouldn't need to have a permit to go through another landowner's property?
Mr. Rebett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I think that's a misstatement in the explanation that it would only be, and the permit would only be for the right-of-way along the public highway, not on a private field or private property. That's a different matter.
Could we just get clarity then? Our researchers are usually pretty thorough. Does the researcher feel that's a misstatement?
Mr. Burris?
Second paragraph.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, if I could have a minute to take a look again at the original language that was summarizing. I can get back to you here.
Thank you. Representative Bearhart. We'll move on to the next question, and then Mr. Burris will get back to this. Senator Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering, we require the railroads to put on special hazmat teams and extra inspectors and everything else because of the possibility of toxic damaging spills from all of the materials that they're carrying. Have you done anything along that line in the event of environmental or road safety, if there's concerns, if there's a spill? Do you have any extra inspection teams or any prepared people that would rush to the scene like we're requiring from the railroads?
Mr. McBeth?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a higher standard in dealing with toxic substances. This is an organic compound, potentially harmful to the environment, yes, if there was a spill. So that's why applicators in these situations are certified, and the Department of Agriculture, working with the Pollution Control Agency, do have training sessions and best management practices, and the technologies are quite advanced in terms of the safety, and they're called flex lines, and they're quite durable, and it's a much preferred alternative, in our opinion, than loading heavy trucks, and there's liability and spill concerns in some cases with that are avoided by running these high-pressure, heavily fortified lines down right away.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
never hurt.
I have not read of any big spills or things happening, but we're so tuned in because of all the railroad problems with one of their off-track stuff that might happen, and spills and fires and stuff. You won't have fires here, but you might have a lot of damage, and that's why I'm asking if, in fact, you are prepared for something that...
Mr. McBeth, or Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, if I could, and Representative Earhart, this is a resource for farmers that they use very carefully. It's not a toxic material. It's an organic material. It comes from an organic place, and it finds an organic purpose. And it's in the farmer's best interest to translocate that material to the field and into the soil as effectively and cleanly as possible. This is the best way of actually translocating this material to the field rather than driving it on the road, and there's usually about 100% chance of material spilling on the road in one way or another if you take it that way. So kind of like pipelines are for gas and oil, hoses are for manure. It's the best way to take it to where it needs to go.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just a quick clarification. So according to what I understand here, if we pass this particular bill here, townships and counties do not need a permit to handle the right-of-way access. Is that correct?
Mr. Driscoll.
Yeah, Representative Petersburg, that is correct. And as a matter of fact, I misspoke as I'm understanding my bill more now than I did before. It was not understood when this bill was passed that this was conveying permitting authority to the townships and the counties. And some of them have taken it upon themselves to realize or to interpret this, the word road authority, to mean them too. And so we would like to change the language in the law so that it's more precise and focused on state government.
Thank you.
Mr. Burris does have Representative Hausman's clarification.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, first I'll note that this was written on April 1st, April Fool's Day. In other words, yes, there is some inaccuracy, I think, in the summary. The provision involved here is on running the force main along the right-of-way, but it can be through a long right-of-way that abuts an adjacent property owner's land as opposed to the permittee's owned land. So a revised summary will be forthcoming.
Hausman? And note, only here in transportation do you get research and comic relief in the same person. Any other questions for members? Anyone else in the audience? I believe we have a few testifiers that are going to be down together here. Welcome, committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, I'm Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And we're here to express concern and opposition to House File 3723 because we think it's actually counterproductive to what the industry is seeking. Prior to this law passing, there was no clarity in statute as to who could what could be in the right-of-way and who could permit it. After this law was passed, it became very clear that the road authorities had jurisdiction over their own roads, which makes sense. If this bill were to pass, we'd go back to that sense of chaos, if you will, for the counties, cities, and townships, because we would lose our permitting express authority to permit. However, the industries would lose their authority to be in our right-of-way, because the bill expressly states, in connection with the use of road right-of-way controlled by the commissioner may issue a permit. The commissioner does not have control over city, county, and town right-of-ways, which means their permit would only be valid in state right-of-way, period. It would not be applicable in the locals. If they came to us asking for the permit for the locals, we'd be back saying, well, they repealed our authority. So there's some implied authority under 160.2715, which is a laundry list of things that thou shalt not do in the right-of-way without a permit, but I'm not convinced that that necessarily applies to these hoses. So the townships that are currently issuing permits were grateful for this law last year. We were not part of the negotiations at that time, but we were very grateful for the results because it provided clarity, provided express authority that if they're one being in our ditches, which many, many, many townships are reporting, is the preferred approach. They are liking these hoses. They're not opposed to the hoses. But if this law passes, we lose our authority. They lose their authority. Now, if the intent is somehow to have a state permit that applies to the local road authorities, that's a whole different apple. That's not what this bill does at all. And at that point, we would be very, very concerned about the usurpation of local control. And we would need to have absolute immunity provided in the bill. There were some misstatements regarding our concerns, township liability, if these hoses are in the right-of-way. When they're in the right-of-way by permit, then we have clearly worked with the permit holder, dealing with the insurance and the bonding that they already have, according to Mr. McBeth. So that's not going to be an issue, but that's going to be clarified in the permit. We're going to have a copy of that insurance. We'll have a copy of their permits, their licensing, that they're lawful applicators. So that's not going to be an issue. Without it, if we discover that there is a hose in our right-of-way under this bill, now we have knowledge of an artificial obstruction in the right-of-way. If any third party is injured, for example, you've got a number of ATVs and other types of vehicles that are expressly authorized to be in the road right-of-ways. If they were to have a problem by hitting one of these hoses, it would be a problem. If, because we're not issuing the permits, it happens to be one of the times we're out there doing the ditch mowing and the mower hits one of these lines, it's quite possible that you're going to sever the line and now you've got an environmental issue and spill. So we absolutely have liability exposure unless we have the direct permitting or the state takes on full liability indemnification. But that would be a totally different bill. We'd have a few more stops to make along the way. So I just want you to be clear that if this bill were to pass, what you're voting for is to repeal our authority, repeal their authority, and grant it only in state highways, period. And we just think that's the wrong way to go. It puts us back a step, and it creates more chaos. The current law works. It creates express authority and allows the townships and locals to do what they want to do, which is allow these houses to be there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the greater Minnesota regional center counties and 4 of the suburban counties. I'll just add a few things to Mr. Sulem's comments. Again, we concur that last year's law gave explicit authority when permitted to place these hoses, manure movement devices in our right-of-ways. And we certainly support that technology for the advantages it has of not having to move the heavy vehicles, trailers, tank trailers on our highways. But we have to have knowledge that these hoses have been placed. When we're mowing, the grass that we're mowing is frequently 10 inches or more. And consequently, the fact that these have been placed in our right-of-way may be completely obscured from our operators and consequently the accidents of possibly hitting those hoses and breaking them and causing manure spill is very high. So we very much believe that we need the permits to allow us to know that that's there and either schedule our mowing or other maintenance or construction work or the permittee's use of the right-of-way for moving his or her manure at times where there's not that conflict. I'll just point out, the Mr. Sulem referred to it, but this just simply is not a permitted use without this law. 160.2715 that is cross-referenced in the whole 160.27, which identifies permitted uses of right-of-ways, says explicitly that you can. It is a misdemeanor to obstruct any ditch draining any highway, and further that it's also a misdemeanor to place any object within the limits of a highway except as provided under 160.27. Again, if you take away this authority for locals to permit it, it becomes an illegal use. With that, I'll conclude to answer any questions.
Mr. Sulem or Mr. Carlson, what were you doing prior to this?
Were you with
the township and the counties issuing permits prior to this?
Mr. Chair, prior to this law coming, when we would get calls, all we could do is say, well, there's no express authority. Looking at the combination of 160.272715, you could make an argument that we could permit only to the extent that we could say, as a road authority, we have no objection, but you have no right to be there in the first place. You're trespassing if you go on anybody else's land. So we could permit them to be within our potentially, and again, it's very vague authority, but within a town right-of-way on their own property. You know, if they want to go from point A to point B in the right-of-way to get to the other end of their field, conceivably we could look at permitting that. It's not clear, it's not express, but we couldn't go beyond that because we have no authority to permit them to trespass on their neighbor's land. This law makes it clear what's allowed in the right-of-way is recognized by the state as a public use of the right-of-way. Once we've got the public use recognized by state, then we can look at the permits as provided in the existing law.
So to be clear, so this was happening, you weren't permitting it before?
We could either try to issue a permit or we'd say you're not allowed to be there. If it went on, if a farmer were to put a hose that we're aware of and we just look the other way, we would absolutely have some liability exposure. Yes, we're going to bring the farmer and the applicator in as third parties. Absolutely, we're going to try that. If we're looking the other way to an artificial obstruction, then we absolutely have liability exposure for that. And so we'd advise our members, no, you can't do that. So if this bill passes, we'd go back to advising our members, don't let the hoses be in your right-of-way. It's not legal.
So, McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sulem, I'm trying to remember, before last year, we had a law that you could cross the right-of-way perpendicularly but not run parallel. Am I remembering it correctly? I thought we had something in law because you could allow people to use a culvert and go under the road and cross perpendicular, and the efforts were to allow hoses to go parallel with the right-of-way.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, McNamara, the issue of going through or under the right-of-way or trying to cross over it, at that point, again, what you're dealing with is only as a road authority, is there an issue there? You're not crossing other people's land. You're dealing only with the road authority's concerns. And so we'd be looking at that, as Mr. Carlson pointed out, the language in those two statutes, all things are improper unless permitted by, and then we look to see is there room there within those statutes to authorize you to cross the road or as the bill was trying to do. But again, you're dealing with the town's authority over its road or its portion of the ditch. We can't get into the broader aspects of other people's land unless you leave the law as it currently reads.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But, Mr. Sulem, I thought the law, our effect was to make the law work. That was the intent of it, that it would allow it to run parallel along on the back of the right-of-way, parallel with, and be on the right-of-way. That seems to make a lot of sense. And I would think that we should be trying to accommodate this. This is good technology to be using these hoses, and you guys should get this worked out. We should move the bill to the floor, and you guys figure this out so that this can get done. Because Representative Drazkowski is trying to fix something that evidently there's some shortcoming in the law, but we don't want the effect to be of you guys all shutting this operation down. This is a good thing. And as far as the safety issues, a pipe going perpendicular to the road is a lot more dangerous than one run along the fence. So I'm not understanding where you're coming from in this argument, and now we're creating unsafe situations.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I think you have to look at this very clearly in the two parts. We're not arguing about the should they or should they not be allowed to be there. We're saying under current law, with what you passed last year's passage was the correction. That was the fix. That clarified the authority. It clarified the process. If you were to pass 3723, you'd be repealing the fix. You'd return us to the 2014 laws, which is the very unclear, everybody doing a mishmash of things. Because we have now currently have express authority and the statute repeals that authority, we would now advise our members, the legislature has made very clear the statutory intent is to not allow these in our town ditches because you're taking away the authority that exists. So if you want what you're describing, you vote against 3723, you leave current law, the fix that was passed last year. If you pass 3723, you're removing the authority, you're removing the ability for us to do it, and now anybody that's in our ditches would be illegal because they wouldn't have authority and they wouldn't have a permit. So the current law is the fix that you passed last year that does control the right-of-way, the placement. That's what we like. We support current law. 3723 does away with all that.
So, McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Sullum, why is industry asking for this change?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I'm assuming because they don't want to come to us and ask for a permit. They're trying to bypass the permit process is all I can come up with. When we met, when they contacted us back in January, they reached out to our office, and we discussed this, and they said, well, what if we just restricted this to state highways? So we don't have a jurisdiction on state highways. If you do something for state highways, it doesn't have an impact on us in terms of where the hoses are, but we lose the authority, you lose the ability to be there. So we had that discussion going back to January. The first time we had language was 5 minutes after it became public last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Sullum, it was my understanding that some townships didn't like it. What if the townships were given either they could grant the authority or just blanket give it out? Would you be opposed to it then? In other words, if some townships wanted to go through the process, but other ones just wanted to say, we're going to give the permit, it's blanket, we don't require you to fill one out.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, townships, with the law as it sits today, they have the discretion on what they're going to put in their permit. We do have a model permit, but they have the absolute authority to do what they wish on the permit. If they're not as concerned about liability, if they're wanting to be a little more lax on their process, they absolutely have that authority. That exists today. If you pass 3723, that authority disappears. We have no discretion.
Okay, but
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but you didn't ask, maybe I guess real direct. If we put it in place that there could be townships could decide to grant permits, but they don't need to.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, that's current law. That's what exists right now. That's what we're saying. Don't pass 3723. If they want to do the permits, they have the express authority to do it. If they don't do the permits, if they choose to look the other way, they're assuming the liability, or if they decide it's not right for their communities, if for whatever reason they decide that the hoses aren't correct for that township, then that's local authority and subject to the residents. So
sorry.
Current law is what you're advocating for, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sullum, are you in the industry agreeing that I don't think the industry came down and testified that they feel townships absolutely don't need to grant, they can blanket grant, they can just let it go with no permit. I think they feel there's a need to grant a permit. What I'm saying, could we clarify that townships, if there's not a process in place, they're automatically granted? Is that something you would support? That seems like you're telling me that a lot of, or I'm assuming a lot of townships don't care.
Mr. Sullum.
Mr. Chair, from McNamara, if you're trying to imply, would there be some state authority to say that they're lawful there without a permit, but you have a permitting authority if you wish to regulate locally? That is not addressed at all in 3723. I suppose that's a conversation we could have, except that would get back to the issue of if they're going to be allowed by state law, just blanketly be allowed, that's when we'd have to have the conversation about the need for the immunity, for the state to give the locals the immunity. If we don't regulate it locally, we want the liability shifted that, hey, this is a state mandate, it's not our issue. And that, again, is not addressed in 3723 at all. We had that conversation with the industry back in January as well, pointed out that we'd be willing to talk to them about that, but that's not the route they chose to pursue. I think what they're trying to say is they're trying to impose that this state permit under 3723 applies to all right-of-ways, and it doesn't. It applies to those controlled by the commissioner, which are the state highways. So I don't know what they're trying to tell their members, but I'm telling you, if 3723 passes, we're going to tell our members it's unlawful because they don't have a permit. We don't have a permit process. If you want to create some broader authority, the permitting authority being optional, that's a conversation we could have, but we'd have to get the immunity language as part of that. And again, we had that conversation with the industry in January.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification. So it sounds like you're saying that the right-of-way and authority that you have over the roads, you don't have the option currently to permit access or not access on anything, or are you just talking about these pipes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, under current law, without 3723, we have permitting authority. If you pass 3723, we lose permitting authority. Without the permit, they're not legal in the right-of-way that are controlled by townships or, respectively, by counties. It'd be cities, too. We just have a county case where you're running a lot of manure lines down the city streets. So that's why they're not here. They're letting us work on it. But it applies to all three entities. If we want the permitting authority and you want these to be allowed in the right-of-way at all levels, you leave current law as is. If a township right now or a county were to decide we have permitting authority, we're not going to issue it, and a farmer wants to put the pipe there, at that point, it's an illegal activity, and both sides are accepting the risk of that. I can't encourage that as a lawyer. I'd never advise my client to do that. If they do it, they're doing it, you know, on their own assumption of the risk. But the law would be very clear that without a permit, it's not lawful. And so if you repeal our permitting authority, which is what 3723 does, there would be no permit, there'd be no hoses in the township right-of-ways or the county right-of-ways.
I think we're working around in circles here, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the clarity here. Because I think we're talking about a couple of different things here. Within the realm of the responsibility of townships, they have a certain amount of rights and obligations and responsibilities. I believe that there is some permitting and other regulatory authority that they have, whether this bill addresses that or not. The question is, prior to this, I believe that the townships could have had the opportunity to have required permits and have generated them. The previous bill may have made it clear, but this only, again, specifies that we're mandating the Department of Transportation on its own right-of-way to do that, and local townships and local counties could still impose their permits and others, similarly to burning permits and others, and cities can do ordinances and other things. So why is there a difference? Help me understand this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, we only have the authority to allow what the statutes provide, right? And right now, if you go back to the 2014 version of law prior to last year's bill, our ability, there's nothing in the statutes that would address these hoses. So now you're looking at, is there a way to try to finagle it in under some of the other statutes? I think it's not at all clear. There's arguments that could be made, but if they're challenged in court, there's no guarantee they'd be upheld. The law that was passed last year, the 2015 fix, clarified expressly the permitting authority for this use. We have other permitting authority for other specific uses. So it's all a matter of what the statutes provide. If you look at the reason that we lose the authority for this particular industry is that you're striking the language on 1.9, you're striking of a road authority, and you're changing it to right-of-way controlled by the commissioner. The right-of-ways controlled by the commissioner are the state highways only. They have no the commissioner has no control over our local ditches. So that the 1.9 is expressly repealing our authority for this particular use. And then it goes on with 1.17 and 1.19 as well, specifically striking. Now, what that also does is we'd have to go back. You've got this ambiguous authority that may or may not really apply under the old law. If you're trying to figure out how do you interpret that ambiguity, we'd say, well, in 2015, they gave us express authority. In 2016, they repealed that express authority. That must mean that the intent of the legislature is there is no permitting process for these in local right-of-ways. So if you want us to allow these, which we want to have them, we want these hoses to be allowed, you leave current law, you vote down 3723. If you vote for 3723, you are expressly repealing our authority for this use. There's other uses that have other statutes.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's very clear to me. You're saying last year was a good fix. Fixed it for everybody. But if we pass this, it takes the fix away from you. It only allows MnDOT to use the fix. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's absolutely correct.
Representative Norton.
Well, I don't know that I have anything more to add, except that I guess I would encourage us not to pass this and send it over with this much question. It seems to me it could be tabled and brought up on at our next meeting if a solution can be arrived at, but I'm very uncomfortable moving ahead with this much question about whose authority we're taking away with this fix, and I don't think it's whose we intend to take away.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sulem, there's obviously some confusion with this, and I can imagine some of the townships are confused about how to handle that. Does the association offer them any assistance how to handle these issues out in the field? Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. After this law passed last year, we put together a guide. The attorney who heads up our insurance loss control efforts put together a sample permitting process, walked through the statute, walked through the process that's expressly authorized through the 2015 fix. If there's questions about that or how they can deviate from that, because again, it's just a model, it's not a mandate, it's just a sample, we take those questions as inquiries on a daily basis. People call us asking, how do we make this work at the town level? So we're absolutely available. But if they call, if 3723 were to pass and I were to get that call, my answer would be, do not allow them. The authority we had has been expressly repealed.
Thank you. And then have permits been given in the last year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I assume there have been based on the fact that the calls we're getting. We don't track who actually is doing it, so I can't say with any certainty. But based on the calls that we had and the questions we've had when we've been on the road doing our training, I'm assuming somebody's doing it. I'm also assuming that that's probably what drove some of the industry to come because they didn't like what the permit was asking for. I can't say with certainty of that, but I'm guessing based on past experience that may have ignited some of the concerns that they didn't like what the permit authority was asking for.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Emily Pugh with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'll be very brief because Ken and Keith have expressed our concerns very well. But ultimately, we were supportive of the bill that passed last year that added road authorities to statute. It not only provided authority for us to permit, but also for the operating owners to be in our rights of way. It just provided clarity to an otherwise gray area, and so we support the statute as is.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed. I thought that we were offering, Representative Draskowski's worked on this issue, and I thought he had a fix. So I've got an open mind, Mr. Chair. I'll leave it up to you. Either send it to the floor and fix it, or if you want to give it a second chance, if these folks want to actually get serious and figure something out by tomorrow, or I guess we come back Wednesday. I'd leave it up to you, Mr. Chair. But I thought Representative Draskowski was offering a solution here, and it seems like people have not been talking to each other.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. We do have one other testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee and continue with your testimony.
Chairman Kelly and members, my name is David Buck. My son DJ is here with me. We have a dairy farm in Good. You actually have two dairy farms in two different counties, actually. My son started a custom manure pumping business 3 years ago, so... In fact, even as we speak, the manure is flowing. So,
I hope that wasn't just for this place.
I didn't mean it that way. comments. I want to address the representative's concern on the hazmat material and that end of it first. It's not a hazardous material. It's a valuable asset to the cropland. And when we are pumping, we have the technology. We're in a tractor. We have flow meters in there. If something ever happens where the flow is interrupted, we know like that. You're just watching. It tells you. So if there would be a break in hose or something, we have radios between all our tractors. So it's not like something's going to happen and it's going to go on for a long time and have a large spill. So the technology today is quite good. We operated previous years before the law that was passed last year and never had any issues. We we have to have that ability to go down the township right of ways. We were talking on the way up, I think we pumped for 7 different farms or families, and we didn't think any of them could get to all their land by, you know, not using the line, the township lines. We have to have that in order to move it. The other alternative is to take it down the road, and I think everybody here can agree that that is not a a good way to go back to that. I've been dealing, 40 years ago this year is when I first started dealing with liquid manure, and this is the best technology. We have to figure out a way to make it work. I have some concern that a township could be not animal friendly, say, and they just decide they aren't going to allow it. What do we do then? And there, that situation could come up. We're already licensed by the state. We have to, through the Department of Ag, we get a commercial applicator license, have to have liability insurance. So as far as liability goes, we're it. I mean, us and our insurance company. The concern about the ditch mowing, we're out there in the spring and you drive down the ditch wherever you lay your hose. It's not like these hoses are hidden. You can see them, I guess. I guess if anyone has any questions, I'd certainly be happy to answer them to my best of my ability.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Buck. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. And I agree with you from what I've learned that the dairies do a good job of managing the manure, and I think the modern way of doing it is there's some really nice safeguards in there, and I appreciate the progress that the industry has made. I'm curious, in your farms, have you applied for any permits from townships to run the line along the road?
Mr. Buck.
Chairman Kelly and Representative, we spoke with our township and they're not interested at all in dealing with the permitting process. They are quite comfortable with what we've been doing, you know.
And then, consequently, am I to understand then that you're trucking the manure, or
no? We are hosing, and our township hasn't in the past required any permitting or anything. So,
Representative Johnson.
Nor since the law passed. So it's kind of like the situation that Mr. Sewell was alluding to, that if a township just kind of begs off on it, that's satisfactory as well? Is that what I'm understanding?
Chair Kelly and Representative, I went to our annual township meeting a month ago, and wasn't even aware of this until they handed out at the meeting a sheet of paper explaining what was, that there was this law on the books now. There really wasn't any discussion about it at the meeting, other than they said they would learn more about it, but they have not requested any permits or anything from us anyway.
Representative North.
Yes, I was just looking for a little clarity into that line of thinking here. So what I heard from Mr. Sulem was that because the law passed last year, there was a possibility for legal protection and permitting, but it also was permissive. And so the last year's fix allowed exactly what you described to happen. What I'm hearing you say is that perhaps that was happening anyway. And I guess I would ask Mr. Sulem, if it was happening prior to 2014, if there were any problems with it, or if 2014 just helped everybody feel comfortable and that there was some legal protections now. So I guess I'm looking to see if what you described historically is true beyond 2014, 2013, and back, and why we feel more comfortable since the last year's bill was passed, and that we don't change it before we change it.
Mr. Buck, do you have a comment?
Chair Kelly and Representative Norton, they've been pumping manure in our township for, I'm guessing, 15 years, and there's never, to my knowledge, there's never been any permitting or discussion in that regards, I guess. So,
yeah, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And that's exactly what I was hearing you say. I heard that Mr. Sulem thought 2014 offered protection. So I'm wondering if he could step forward and answer that, if I or am I misunderstanding? Because it sounds like...
We'll allow Mr. Sulem to come back.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I think the situation that's being described here is the level of permit that's going to be issued. A township doesn't have to be very complex in their permit. They don't have to follow everything that we recommend. They could have a very simple blanket permit. They could, if they want, we wouldn't encourage it, but if they want to give the verbal permission saying, yeah, we're fine, at least then if there was an issue, the town would be on record as saying, yes, we said it was okay. There was a permission given. Prior to last year's fix, they really couldn't give that permission with any clear authority. You know, they could say, yeah, we don't care, but we're not sure what the law really allows. After last year's fix, they can make it a very simple permit. They could make it the phone call, yes, and document that. We'd like a little more paper trail. Lawyers like paper trails. But they could be a simple permission granted, or they could have a very formal permit. That's the local choice, but they at least would have the authority to do it. If this authority is repealed as 3723 is drafted, if they called and said, can we be in your right-of-way, we'd have to say we can't allow that. We can't, as a township, allow it. Our authority has been repealed. So if you want the hoses, you vote against 3723. We can have a very, very simple permit process. We have a complex one. That's a local decision between the voters and their elected board.
So, Mr. Sulem, are you suggesting then with the previous law that we enacted, now the townships and counties must give authority?
Mr. Chair, could a township absolutely say we are not granting any permits, we're working our right-of-way to say no, they're not going to be allowed here? Yes, the county could do that, the township could do that. I don't foresee that happening, but yes, it could happen. But if you pass 3723, we have to advise that they're not allowed because you're repealing the authority that's in the law. And that's, I think, where the confusion comes. Prior to last year's fix, there was no express authority one way or the other. People were making very vague comments and statements. We don't have a care, but we don't have any control either. With last year's fix, the authority was given to give the permission. With anything that gives permission, yes, the answer may be no. I wouldn't foresee that becoming a very common situation because, as has been discussed, the more and more of these hoses are being used and out there, people are recognizing their advantage. But that permission could be a very simple permission granted. If you repeal it, if you pass 3723, our authority disappears. So if we get that phone call, we have to, under advice, say, we have no authority to issue a permit. We have no authority to allow you to be there. And the only authority allowed, again, if you look at 1.9, the road right-of-way controlled by the commissioner. That are state; those are state highways only. There's no authority over the local roads.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to state what I think I'm hearing here. And one is from what Mr. Carlson and Mr. Sulem has stated. Because we passed the legislation last year, we definitely gave authority to the local authorities to do something. If we repeal it, so now if we're repealing it, it means we're absolutely taking it that away. And I guess I'll ask Mr. Sulem, is that right?
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, for the basis, you're repealing the express peer authority. So now you put it back into the ambiguity. And if you're doing an analysis of ambiguity, you look at what is the legislative intent. Mm-hmm. And the intent would be, well, they gave us authority, they repealed our authority, therefore their intent must be no authority.
Okay, maybe if Representative Jaskowski goes over what his original intent would be, maybe that would be clarified. But I think we're going round and round.
Yes, I do believe. Thank you, Representative Mason. I think we are going to have some clarity here. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Buck. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you, Mr. Buck, and other testifiers. It is a complex issue, and as you've heard, there wasn't a distinction in statute prior to last year. The legislature came forward and had this language. It says a road authority, which created in itself some ambiguity and uncertainty among local units of government. And as we've heard from Mr. Buck, I think inherently in some of what he has said, and I can tell you that I have seen this, that this type of idea that townships are going to be permitting their farmers to put to do this is countercultural. And even if we were to explicitly say it in statute and say it clearly, which it is not in statute now, my sense is some townships would still not want to do it because it is countercultural. I do have some ideas, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to bring forward. If we could lay the bill over, come back on Wednesday, and I think we can make it clear to townships and counties that we expect farmers to have the ability to do this.
That sounds good. Wonderful, Representative Drazkowski. So I would take it Representative Drazkowski is withdrawing his motion of House File 3723 to move to the General Register, and I will lay the bill over for today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. This will be taken up Wednesday, then, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move to House File 1018, Representative Keel. Good afternoon, Representative Keel. I will move House File 1018. House File 1018 to the Committee on Ways and Means. We also have an A1 amendment, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
Looks like we are missing the A1 amendment. Representative Keel, we'll go make copies and we will start with testimony on your bill. So with that, Representative Keel, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A while ago, I had a custom combiner come to me and explain that he hires non-domiciled workers to help a function from Texas to Northern Minnesota to do different various custom combining, and there was a law change, and I'm going to let Mr. Clevin explain it. And anyway, it is very difficult now for them to hire workers that require a license, driver's license, in order to effectively custom combine from border to border. So with that, I will let Mr. Clevin explain House File 1018.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers. And I want to tell you, when we get the amendment, there's more words. There's a lot of words here for not a lot. This is essentially a federal conformity bill. And this bill is a result, really, of an email chain that went on between the Wheat Growers, Department of Public Safety, and the Federal Motor Carrier Administration representative here in St. Paul down on Jackson Street, summer of 2014. There's still a question about whether this is needed or not. We were told that it was, and we have made the first deadline in the other body. This passed the Senate floor last year, so we made the first deadline, which is why we're here this week. This, I should tell you what this is not. This is not about the issue of non-immigrant driver's license, border security, DREAM Act stuff. This is about commercial driver's licenses, which is 10,000 pounds and more. It's for trucks, semis, and so forth. That's what this bill is about. And it's really a federal conformity bill. In 2011, the feds passed a change in this area, non-domiciled folks who are here on visas and so forth that are driving trucks, commercial motor vehicles. So they already have a driver's license. So they have a commercial driver's license. They changed a couple references in 2011. They gave the states 3 years to comply. North Dakota changed theirs in 2013. And essentially, this has never been an issue now until this change, okay? So custom harvesting works where a business has three, four, five combines, they've got a couple grain carts, they've got some trucks. They start in Texas with the winter wheat, and they move north as it ripens. And so they'll go through Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, they'll wind up in the Dakotas, and they'll wind up in Minnesota in August. It's not a very family-friendly type industry because it's mostly single people that work in these kind of environments. The owner may have a family. They put the kids in the camper, and they spend the summer moving north. A lot of single people, a lot of college kids, for example, will have this kind of work. One of the pools of people are folks who are going to college, for example, who might be from other countries. Okay, so that's where the non-domicile comes in. The email chain from the department was this. The feds wrote in, the wheat growers asked the question, is Minnesota going to recognize this federal change? The federal motor carrier directed us to DPS. They directed us back to the feds. And the federal government representative said this. Minnesota must meet the requirements of 49 CFR Part 383.71 or risk losing federal highway funding. Minnesota does not currently have the system to accept the non-domicile individual from a foreign country license. So the crews get to the Minnesota border, and now certain people can't drive the trucks. And that's why we're here, is to make the law change to adopt federal code. That's essentially it. North Dakota, as I mentioned, passed it. Here's theirs. They passed it in 2013. I simply went to the North Dakota code, picked it up. We met with DPS last year. They had a couple of points on effective dates, which you'll see in your amendment, and also to zero it out so that there was no fiscal note. That was our effort last year. DPS had informed our author, I think, before the hearing, that we may not need this. And our only concern with this bill is that when the taillights leave this place on May 24th, we don't find out that, oh, yeah, I guess you did. So we want to make sure. If we get a letter from somebody saying you really don't need it, we'll take it. But for now, we don't have that. We have the Fed saying we need it. And that's why we're here today.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for members? Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just got one question, and it just popped into my head. Of all these trucks from Canada that I see, commercial trucks going down the road, not these, how do they comply with the federal law and the state law? That's the question that just popped into my head when you say non-domicile. Well, they're non-domicile. How does it work with them?
Mr. Clayton.
Mr. Chairman, I'll take a stab. Maybe counsel can help. But they would have a commercial driver's license in their country. I think it's recognized by the U.S. government. So they just come across the border, and our trucks go north. So I think there's a reciprocity issue more than a non-domiciled issue there. It's a guess, though.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Piersberg.
Thank you, which does kind of request item of reciprocity. So if they were to get a non-domicile driver's license in another state, would Minnesota not recognize it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Piersberg, that's our understanding. That's what the communication from the feds was, is they could get it somewhere else. Minnesota wouldn't recognize it because they don't have the program. We're not in compliance. That's why we brought it forward. That was our understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Members, we are passing out the A1 amendment. Mr. Clavin or Representative Keel, would you like to speak to the A1 amendment?
Yes, please.
Representative Keel.
Generally, this is the bill that went through the Senate, so it's identical to the Senate bill. Clavin. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We took the language from across the street last year, coded it up, and so the bill's introduced changed. You'll see it was introduced last year. February 18th. And as I mentioned, it did pass the other body, and this is the way it passed, so we simply took, if you call it the agreement with DPS, the language you worked out with them last year, and simply coded it for today. So it's a substantial amendment. Like I said, there's a lot of words for not a lot. That's essentially what it does.
All right, then I will move the A1 amendment to House File 1018 to get it in the form the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if you can explain a bit more, Mr. Clavin, how this works. I mean, is this like, if they're working in many different states, is this an endorsement that Minnesota has to attach to a license that the person is carrying? Or is it, you know, all states are reflected on a license that they get earlier, say in Oklahoma or something?
Mr. Clavin.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck. So when you get a commercial driver's license, it's issued by DPS, but it's a federal program essentially. And the changes that were done, the regulation's been there for many years. The changes that were done in 2011, it was two things. The term was changed from non-resident CDL to non-domiciled. I don't remember in the Federal Register why that was done, but that's what they did. None of the conditions for obtaining that license changed, though. And second, they also now require, and this is the feds, require proof that a person is entitled to a CDL. Persons who are not U.S. lawful citizens but can meet the documentation requirements of being illegally in the U.S. are entitled to get the license. So I have a Class B. I could have a Class A, which is a semi-license. It's essentially a CDL. But on a farmer's exempt from CDL requirements. And I worked for my dad, and I farmed over the years. And so I don't need the CDL. But if I do it for hire or I cross state lines, then I have to get a CDL. And that's actually the trigger point here is they're moving from Texas up. They're crossing state lines. Mm-hmm. So if the farmer did his own, he wouldn't need it. So anybody can get a CDL if you go through the training. And it's no different for the non-domiciled workers. They simply would get a CDL. So if I pull out my license here, it will say Class B on it. And that was a CDL license is a CDL license. It's not an endorsement.
Okay. But and so then,
run back.
Mr. Chair, if I'm to understand, then it's a specific document that they have to apply for here in Minnesota. It's unique to Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, not only that, but also to be recognized from the other states. We don't have the program, according to the feds. And so we're out of compliance with that federal rule.
And is it, Mr. Chair, is it useful then, say somebody doesn't have an automobile driver's license, can this be used interchangeably for their driving an auto?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, again, I'll stab at it. My Class B license is a driver's license for a car. So I think a CDL would entitle you to do do a car as well. It's a Class A. So I think that's the same. I see counsel nodding at me. Thanks for phone a friend.
Any other questions for members? Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, on your motion, I don't know what staff says, but we tried to zero out the fiscal note with the amendment last year, and I think according to DPS it was. So in terms of ways and means, maybe that's just a stop, but I just want the committee to know I think we zeroed it out, just so its members know.
Okay. Representative Keel, it's my understanding that Ways and Means does still want to see the bill, so that's the amendment motion will stay the same, but to your bill.
Okay.
Any closing comments?
I think it's pretty straightforward, and I appreciate the members hearing this bill. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And I will renew my motion that House File 1018, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I move the bill, 3689.
Representative Johnson moves House File 3689 be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move two amendments. First, the A1.
Representative Johnson moves the A1 amendment. Any comments on it?
Yeah, the A1 amendment brings this language in conformity with what the Senate did. This has been heard in the Senate Transportation Bill and an agreement between the Department of Transportation and Senator Jensen, the Senate author.
Okay. Then Representative Johnson moves the A1 to get in the format that he would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Johnson moves the A3 amendment, again, to get the language in the bill or the format in the way the author would prefer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment passes as well.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. I think most, if not all of us, were at the Office of the Legislative Auditor's hearing on related to selection, MnDOT Highway Project selection. During that hearing, we heard a lot about involving citizens and transparency and openness in government. And it brought to my memory an experience that a community near my district of New Ulm had in just a few months ago, where I think it demonstrated the ability of MnDOT and communities to work together to come together towards positive results. Basically, it was about an intersection of Highway 14 and Highway 15. Highway 14, I think you all know, runs across southern Minnesota and goes east and west. Highway 15 runs north-south, and I think of it as coming south from St. Cloud all the way down to Iowa through Hutchinson, New Ulm, and Fairmont. And consequently, there's an intersection, a very important intersection, of Highway 14 and 15, and that intersection is just north of the river before the road goes across the river over a bridge. Ever since I've been elected, I've been hearing from the folks in New Ulm saying, you know, if we're going to do that bridge, we better do that intersection at the same time. And boy, it seemed sure made sense, the idea that you wouldn't want to replace the bridge, shut down that access to the city, and then a couple years later do an intersection and shut down that bridge again. And the good folks of New Ulm and the neighbors around there in my district in the north of New Ulm said, yeah, that's a good idea. And I think that started a long communication process with District 7 in my area of MnDOT. And they worked together. The bridge is slated to be rebuilt. And they really worked through a compromise and scaled back the size of the bridge. It's a long story to make it shorter. Scaled back the size of the bridge replacement in response to the need to also do at the same time the intersection. And it was really a good example of citizens working together, MnDOT listening well, and there's a lot of satisfaction on it. And I think Minnesota can be satisfied that it's a good example of what we can do to work together to create, solve problems and meet challenges. What I learned from that experience was that MnDOT does have the capacity to listen and be involved with the community. And I also learned that so do our neighbors in Minnesota have the capacity, very much the capacity, to be involved in project selection and those sorts of decisions about major transportation projects. Consequently, this bill, and it's really in response to the recommendations made by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and fundamentally what this bill does, it provides for more transparency, more openness, the involvement of local stakeholders in developing best practices to better clarify many of the criteria that are used, and to provide it through the amendment a more open long-term planning and prioritization process for expansion projects that we hope to see throughout Minnesota in highways such as 14. So with that, I present the bill.
Questions from members? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, do you have a fiscal note on this?
Mr. Johnson, there should be a copy of that in here. Representative Johnson?
Yeah, I believe $140,000.
Yes, correct.
And this was received this morning.
Okay. Representative Chair, that $140,000, is that for an additional FTE or something to that effect?
Representative Johnson?
I believe it is, but it's 1.13.
Oh.
Representative. So, yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ugo.
Thank you. I guess with the my comment would be, with the number of employees MnDOT has right now and everything, I'm just a little curious why they feel that they need another 1 point whatever FTE, and if they couldn't just the personnel they have within the department to take care of these new requirements. Have you had any conversations with them about that?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Uglum, I did, and they do believe they need that. But I would, obviously, I agree with you, to be real honest with you. But I would ask that the Department of Transportation comment on the fiscal.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to bring up the conversation about that. as far as operating lean and mean, if that can be done, it would be a very good thing. Thank you.
Anyone like from the department like to make a comment on that? Seeing you have the short straw in your hand.
Hi.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Kieske. I'm the director of the Office of Transportation System Management at MnDOT. And in response to the question about the fiscal note, the tasks involved of involving ourselves with the local agencies on all the different projects, it's really something that's spread across all the districts, so it's not one single person, but it's parts of a job in all of our districts and in a couple of places in the central office that we're adding up to arrive at 1.13 FEs.
Representative Ugo?
Mr. Chair, thank you. So if it's not, Mr. Kieske, if we're not just hiring a person, so your additional cost here of $140,000, is that additional compensation for the people throughout the system in overtime, or what is that?
Mr. Kieske.
Mr. Chair, it would probably happen with redirection of tasks, so somebody who's doing one job might have to do more of that job, and then another place they might have to backfill with another person in another time for other tasks that were delayed because of that.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Bugum. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. So if we're backfilling and using people and everything else, I just fail to see why we come to the conclusion of $140,000. I guess I would ask you to take another look at that.
Mr. Kieske?
Right. Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for a while there, I was going to ask Representative Johnson to talk about the importance of Highway 14, but I know that that's already been done. But getting back to the question, I'm going to piggyback a little bit on Representative Uglum's request, and I think this may be to Mr. Kieske. One of the things that I heard during that OLA report was the commissioner really agreeing with a lot of the discussions and the points that the auditor said and how they're valid in that he would be looking at ways to implement them. My question is, how is he going to get the funding and the support to do that in the future without these dollars being appropriated or generated through this? It seems to me that if he was going to be implementing these processes already, he would have had some thought and plan of where it was coming from. So whereas all of a sudden now we need another $140,000 from something he was going to do anyway?
Mr. Kieske.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, these are high priority tasks for us to complete in response to the OLA audit. The fiscal note is simply calculating what we think the cost of that will be. But those tasks weren't necessarily planned prior to the audit. They are planned now, but that would be the impact of the department.
Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that does come to the point where sometimes we get fiscal notes where we anticipate that there's additional costs only because we haven't done them before, but that we're planning to do them, indicating that maybe we're just putting a guess out there as to what we think, or it's an opportunity for us to ask for more money rather than instead utilizing the process itself. To save money as well is not being considered into the particular fiscal note. So we can have a fiscal note that says, well, we're going to spend $100,000, but it's going to save $200,000. That's not listed in the fiscal note all the time, at least in fiscal notes that I've seen. So sometimes maybe fiscal notes aren't as helpful as we think, but it certainly is a way of inflating the cost, and that's one of the concerns that I have. So if you have a final comment, I appreciate that.
Mr. Kieske, comment?
No other comments, thanks.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, and then I'm going to have a comment as well. The question is, one of the things I heard when the auditor was report came out and they were speaking about the standards or the decision making for both the department's priorities but also for the quarters of commerce priorities was that there was inconsistencies and that we needed to be transparent about those. My hope, though, is, and I noticed on line 1.12 you used the word and, because one of the things I want to make clear is that when we passed quarters of commerce, it was because we were not able to move the department off the standards they had in place, which was basically a overlay and fix current roads and not build new lanes. And this committee, I think on both sides of the aisle, have had concerns where the quarters of commerce is a perfect example. We had to create something new in order to get those things moved up in priority. So while we have this reaction to the auditor's report, I hope that and means we can set different standards for the different policies. And so I wanted you to confirm that that and means that they don't have to be the same.
Representative Johnson. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your question, Representative Norton. That's clearly, yes, an and. And that was exactly the point. And we're frustrated where we live because it's pretty clear through the standard processes we will never see if we depend on that solely, expansion of Highway 14. What the design here, though, is to really make sure that those processes are really open to the public. And I think one of the key things, and if we're finding that the criteria aren't working, it will be through this process that we'll have that opportunity. It will come to the light of day. I was struck that some of the, when the corridors of commerce, the OLA identified the three criteria weren't used that I think would be really important down in my neck of the woods. And so I think those are important to be ongoing and express the view of what the legislature passed in 2013. Quarters of commerce, you know, I came here late in that session, and so that had actually been written, those criteria had been written as before I came, and I didn't have input into it, but I wish I could have had an opportunity. I want to compliment Representative Hornstein and those who were involved with it, because those are good criteria, and it does get to that fundamental problem, again in rural Minnesota, of this interregional connection. We have opportunity galore for economic development in greater Minnesota, and a lot of it is built around our regional centers. If we can connect those folks, those communities with four-lane highways that can move goods and people better, we will see more economic development, spread that out across the state. And I think we all know that, and that's why this program has to be strong.
And Mr. Chair, and I would just like to echo some of the comments that my colleagues that spoke before me stated about funding this. I mean, these kinds of things, I think, are core aspects of the department's work, and I'm a little surprised at the fiscal note because I would hope that something like this would just be a change in what we do, not an addition that would require a lot of FTEs. But also, Mr. Chair, I have to just say, we need the quarters of commerce legislation. We have to have some language that directs the department to do something with a mindset that's different than they've done before. And I think that's been the beauty of quarters of commerce. But just having said that, we do need to provide the funds for quarters of commerce and the work that they're currently doing, which is the overlays and the repairs and the work that that department needs to do for all of our behalf, for economic development for the whole state, but also just because that's a fundamental value and fundamental constitutional job of this committee and the state. So I'd encourage a strong bill, Mr. Chair.
So noted. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton sort of said it all, so I don't need to add to that other than to thank Representative Johnson for bringing this forward. You didn't have a lot of time to put, you and Senator Jensen didn't have a lot of time to put this together because it was just, you know, within the last few weeks we got the report. So really appreciate your quick action on this. And as Representative Norton said, I think it's in all of our interests that this Corridors of Commerce program in particular succeeds. We put it together in 2013 on a bipartisan basis. Representative Petersburg, you were really helpful in all of that. And so, again, it's in everyone's interest that this succeed, and I think that's what this bill is doing. So thank you so much, Representative Johnson, for putting it forward.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm just questioning. I mean, I can see where the best practices of number one and two down there make sense. Those are criteria and so on. But it looks like we're adding some process stuff to it, and it appears in the, you know, how do you identify to the stakeholders and general public this, you know, the information about these projects, and then there seems to be some timing. There's going to be extending the process if we're having meetings. It doesn't really get specific about how you're going to involve, you know, the stakeholders and the partnerships. It's not very specific, and is that what you're looking for, the report to identify?
Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the question, Representative Runbeck. All I can say is that, frankly, I live in a MnDOT district where I think they're pretty good at this, and I think it's fundamentally a culture change, and I think they've made that culture change where I live in many ways. And it's kind of creating a habit of involving the stakeholders, involving the citizens, even more importantly, the general public, in a lot of the decisions they're making. I wish you could have tracked what they're doing now. They're shutting down 169 Highway, the link between St. Peter and North Mankato, in just a few days. And the efforts made by the district to inform the public and teach us what that means and how long that will take, what the alternative routes are, and the impacts of that go on and on. There's people who live on that. They'll have to have alternative ways to move from their home to their job. But it's just been an ongoing effort. It's been going on for months now, and the public gets engaged. Here's a good one. There's a member of the public in St. Peter who's developed an app to help the public figure out how to get from St. Peter to North Mankato once the detour starts. And you get that sort of energy, so it kind of works back and forth. As the department gets engaged, so does the public. And I think good things happen from that. I don't think we need to be prescriptive about how that happens. I think there are examples, and I'm sure there's other examples in Minnesota. But this is what I've seen, and I think there's potential. There was a problem identified in the report. So we know there's instances where this is not working well. Let's make sure that the Department of Transportation figures out how to engage the public, how to engage the stakeholders in these decisions, and let that go and let that work. And it'll work a little differently across the state. But I think it will improve transportation. It will and it'll improve the performance of the department and meet the needs of Minnesotans better.
Mr. Chair, you know you're probably right, and it's happening without the state. I mean, putting it in statute, I think, then opens up the potential for aggrieved people who are saying we didn't get informed, we didn't get our chance at the table. It just seems like it could open up a lot, a very prolonged process that will cost money. So the fiscal note may not even cover what this could eventually cost if you're going to put it into place everywhere. That's just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Earhart. No? Okay. All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Welcome to committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Bob again, Carney Jr., registered lobbyist for We the People. I'm very encouraged to see this bill, and I was at the joint hearing where Commissioner Zelli responded to the audit. I talked with him after that hearing, and Senator Champion was here. He's the only person on the Transportation Committee in either the House or the Senate that represents an area of Minneapolis or St. Paul that has a high concentration of poverty and a high concentration of minorities. And he had a question for Commissioner Zelli about the relationship between setting priorities on roads and bridges projects and how that has to do with equity. And it's very interesting to me to go through here and look at both Representative Bernardi's bill and some of the stuff that got cut out before the final ones could come up, and also this one.
Now, on the one hand, it looks like you're starting to look at the question of how these priority decisions are being made in a larger context that includes transit. But I want you to think about something. You know, you've got CTIB that's promoting this program of projects. That's almost a $5 billion program, and they're trying to get a tax increase for that. So you have a real question going forward of how you coordinate roads and bridges projects and transit projects. Let me just give you one example. We're getting ready to start a project on I-35W from Lake Street to downtown. One of the aspects of that is putting in a new transit station on I-35 so express buses can stop. I think that's great. But, you know, if you're looking at possibly moving Southwest Light Rail to I-35, you need to coordinate between MnDOT and the design for that light rail project as to how you can have the most effective transit center. So, you know, I'm very encouraged about this. I'd like to make a couple of suggestions, though. In Subdivision 1, you know, you've got transportation stakeholders identified, but I would suggest some kind of an oral amendment to make a provision that hearings are required and that both oral and written submissions be solicited and accepted and incorporated in this process of coming up with the best practices. I think that would be something that would really be very helpful. But in general, I think the real key issue is to start looking at what's going on with CTIB in this $5 billion program. And by the way, I am opposed, essentially, to that whole program. I think we need to look at bus-based and other alternatives. But I'm really glad to see this. It's a very encouraging development.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? Representative Johnson, just a quick note. Just I think for the department, as we sit here and listen to these comments, I think that is one of the issues that we come up with the fiscal notes that come up. And what the OLA's report simply said is do what the legislature has asked you to do. Fit the criteria and meet those. And that's what we would expect the department to do. So to come back and to say that we'll comply now, but complying now means more dollars to us. You can see the frustration around this table when we get that. So maybe just a note of caution with our fiscal notes and some things that come along with it should justify that. So Representative Johnson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that last comment. I appreciate that a lot. Anyway, this is part of making MnDOT better and making transportation better in Minnesota. So I encourage a yes vote.
Representative Johnson, we did have an A2 amendment. You did not want that moved, correct?
I don't want that moved. Okay.
Representative Johnson then renews his motion at House File 3689 as amended. Be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. That motion prevails. Members, we did have one other bill on the committee doc today. I think we will move that to Wednesday. That's Representative Bernardi's bill. We also will be adding Representative Drazkowski's bill, House File 3723. If we cannot get all of that done on Wednesday, we do have the committee room in the basement reserved for after 6 p.m. After caucus. So that is the last day for deadlines, so we certainly want to get through everyone's bills and meet them. Representative Norton.
I have some bills I'd love to have heard, Mr. Chair. Is there time to put in a request, or have I missed it?
Have you spoken with your Senate counterparts, Representative Norton?
It's in his bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, there we go. Well, then we're okay with deadlines. With that, this meeting is adjourned.